You're listening to a 3CR podcast created in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
3CR would like to acknowledge the Kulin Nation, true owners, caretakers and custodians of the land from which we broadcast. 3CR pays respect to elders, past and present of the Kulin Nation. We recognise their unceded sovereignty.
This is 3CR Breakfast.
Oh, yeah.
Alternative news, analysis, and current affairs. Monday to Friday, 7 a.m. to 8:30 a.m.
Only double.
Clap your hands.
Hello, and you're listening to Tuesday Breakfast. And in the studio with me, I've got Julia.
Hey.
It is the 16th of June, and it's a Tuesday, of course. And we do want to say thank you to the Radioactive Show, 3CR's national program on nuclear peace and energy issues. And yeah, it's just the two of us here today. And we're back after our massive radiothon show last week. Mm-hmm. Yeah, how did you find your first radiothon?
Yeah, I thought it was really fun. I feel like it was really good energy. It was very exciting. It was fun to call people that we all sort of knew or we'd known, you know, we've had on the show before. So yeah, it was very fun vibe. Yes.
Yeah, it was a really good energy, and I think particularly this year it's really exciting because it is 3CR's 50th birthday, mm-hmm. which is huge.
Yep.
And yeah, even though last week was our Radiothon show, the Radiothon is actually going for the rest of the month. So mm-hmm. if you feel like you missed it last week, well, it's not too late. And we're going to do some shout outs later in the show, actually, for mm-hmm. people who've supported Tuesday Breakfast in the last week.
Yes.
And yeah, actually, if you donate during this show, we'll shout you out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, if you want to donate, you can call 03-9419-8777 or you can text 0488-809-855 or you can go to 3cr.org.au/donate. Mm-hmm. Or otherwise, we've also got our Give Now link, which is givenow.com.au/cr/3CRbreakfast2026, and make sure you name Tuesday Breakfast.
Yes, or also just text in if you want to just chat and say hi. That is also very exciting.
Yes, we would very much encourage people to say hello today.
Yes,
I know, yeah, it's been a busy weekend for a lot of people. Mm. How was your weekend, Julia?
It was okay. I was a bit sick. I think I had a little burnout because I've been on uni break, so I was very burnt out, and I just think my body was like, okay, now that everything's over, I'm just going to rest. Mm. So I've been just at home, but yeah, and it's also my birthday tomorrow. So
exciting.
Yeah, so I was kind of like, maybe I'm waiting for my birthday to pick up, so it's exciting.
That's true.
Yes, how was your weekend?
It was good. I went to the RecLink Community Cup on Sunday, which was really fun. So for those who don't know, it's a football game between musicians and radio stations, but not 3CR, which is rude. I don't know the history of that. Maybe someone can let us know. They play a football game. There's music throughout the day. So it was a lot of fun.
Wow. Well, you were the one 3CR representative.
Yeah, watching.
You were team 3CR on your own.
Yes, I had my Radiothon bag from last year. So hopefully people saw that, spreading the word.
Yeah. Also, the Radiothon t-shirts are really cool. Well, they're not Radiothon t-shirts. The 50th birthday t-shirts with the radio on them. I think they're really cool.
Yeah, they do seem really cool. And, yeah, maybe we'll do a quick run through of today's program. So starting at 7:15, Fung is going to chat to Annette Brownlee, chairperson of Independent and Peaceful Australian Network, IPAN, and they're going to be chatting about the public inquiry into AUKUS and the opportunity for people to make submissions.
At 7:30, we'll be speaking with Pranati from SEA. who is a creative worker and local music groupie in support of emerging and diverse artists. And the SXSEA stands for the South by Southeast Asian Group.
And then at 7:45, we're going to be speaking to Catherine Noon from Save Our Community Health Campaign. And Catherine, yeah, joined us last week for the Radiothon, and we're excited to have her back today to be talking about the independent review into CoHealth, which was finally released last week after months of delays. So we're going to chat about the key findings of the report and what it reveals about the governance and management of CoHealth and what its recommendations are moving forward. And then at 8, we're going to hear Fung speak to Shifra Bluestein from Footscray Community Response, who will chat to us about the latest update on Maribyrnong Council's proposed welcome crew in Footscray and explaining why the closure of Foley House will be a devastating loss for the community.
And lastly, at 8:15, we'll be listening to an edit of archival footage that is part of the 3CR's 50th birthday anniversary celebrations. And this particular archival recording is of the S11 protests that occurred in the year 2000.
So we've got a really big show for you today. And yeah, next up, we're going to do our news headlines. Some folks know about it, some don't. Some don't. Some will learn to shout it, some won't. Some won't. But sooner or later, baby, here's a ditty. Say you're gonna have to get right down. You're listening to Tuesday Breakfast, and these are the headlines for Tuesday, 16th of June, 2026. Health Minister Mark Butler has doubled down on his plans to pass contentious NDIS changes as early as this month, warning the opposition against using the bill as a pawn in a bigger chess game as they consider a potential deal with the Greens. The Coalition and the Greens have criticised Labor's truncated timeline to pass NDIS, negative gearing and capital gains changes, and have signalled they could team up against the government in the Senate to extend inquiries into the bills. Disability advocates and NDIS providers roundly criticised the proposed NDIS change at public hearings last week, while state and territory disability ministers argued they could not replace disability supports for the more than 200,000 participants expected to be shifted off the scheme by 2031. The changes to limit who can access the NDIS, which supports more than 760,000 Australians with disabilities, will reduce participant payments by at least $37.8 billion until 2030, according to budget papers.
In other news, one of Australia's most senior bureaucrats is working alongside pro-Israel supporters to bring the selection of university research grants into line with new controversial hate speech laws, a move researchers fear will have a chilling effect on their work. Professor Peter Shergold will chair the Commonwealth Research Grants Working Group, an initiative born out of the Education Antisemitism Task Force. Shergold's inclusion will raise eyebrows in higher education, given that he also chairs the board of the Australian Research Council. In recent years, ARC grants to researchers critical of Israel have become the focus of pro-Israel supporters, in addition to intense and ongoing coverage by pro-Israel outlets such as the Australian newspaper and Sky News. Dr. Jordana Silverstein, a historian and ARC future fellow in the University of Melbourne, shared with Deep Cut that it was very troubling that the chair of the ARC board has chosen to focus on this one form of racism and to do so in this way. The historian noticed that the primary form of racism is aimed at First Nations, with anti-Palestinian racism and Islamophobia skyrocketing. The ARC must be a fully independent body, she continued. This task force, which forms part of the work led by the Special Envoy on Antisemitism, is a massive overreach. Also in the news, United States President Donald Trump and Iran's Deputy Foreign Minister Kazim Gharibabi Buddy said on Sunday that they had reached an initial deal to end the war and to resume traffic through the Strait of Hormuz. Trump said the deal allows for toll-free shipping through the Strait of Hormuz, which has been largely closed since the US and Israel launched an assault on Iran on February 28th. The US and Iran will sign a memorandum of understanding in Switzerland on Friday, said the Prime Minister of Pakistan, whose country has served as a mediator. Today marks 109 days since the war began, with the US and Israel's attacks on Iran. The content of the agreement, which follows a week of fraught negotiations and periodic threats from Trump of new hostilities unless Iran reaches a deal, remained unclear. The Secretariat of Iran's Supreme National Security Council said on Monday that the deal with the US includes the immediate suspension of hostilities on all fronts. Based on the agreements reached, the war and the military operations on all fronts, including Lebanon, will end immediately and permanently as of tonight. And in addition, the naval blockade against Iran will end immediately and completely, it said in a statement.
And finally in the headlines, the chair of a Tasmanian Indigenous Alliance says he is extremely concerned after an Aboriginal heritage site was damaged by the state government agency who covered it with a footpath at a reserve in northern Tasmania. The site at Trevallon Reserve near Launceston is a place home to 11 sites listed on the Tasmanian Aboriginal Site Index, estimated to be hundreds of years old and held more than 100 Aboriginal artifacts and tools. The works which damaged the site were completed by Tasmanian Parks and Wildlife Service, who covered a gravel track with compacted imported fill to create a new cycling and walking path. Tasmanian Regional Aboriginal Corporations Alliance Chair Nick Cameron said news of the site's damage was extremely concerning. The Tasmanian Parks and Wildlife Service sought advice from Aboriginal Heritage Tasmania archaeologists before commencing work on the path. However, the ABC reports the state government agency responsible for the protection and management of the state's Aboriginal heritage advised works could proceed without the need for a formal permit and formal consultation. These have been the news headlines for Tuesday, 16th of June, 2026, and you're listening to 3CR Breakfast on 855 AM.
3CR would like to thank our sponsors, Earth Greetings, cards that connect, care, and celebrate. Support wildlife and habitat with every purchase. Inspired by nature, giving back to the planet. Learn more at earthgreetings.com.au.
In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
Hello and welcome to the very first edition of Women on the Line, the national program of women's news and current affairs. I'm Deb Walsh from 3CR in Melbourne, and you'll be hearing myself and other women from public radio stations around Australia on this program.
You're listening to 3CR, 50 years of radical radio.
In 2026, 3CR is celebrating 50 years on air.
To donate, call 03 9419 8377 or donate online at 3cr.org.au.
Want stories straight from community, culture, language, music and more, all in one place?
Meet ICTV Play, the free on-demand streaming service from Indigenous Community Television.
Watch news, cooking, music, language programs, cultural shows and heaps more videos made by Mob for Mob, anytime, anywhere.
On your phone, your tablet or your computer, ICTV Play brings our stories to life and keeps us connected, no matter where we are.
Download the app today from your favourite app store or jump online at ictv.com.au/app.
Showing our way.
A 3CR supporter.
Hello, welcome to the voice of West Papua. My name is Gibson Sue.
For generations, the people of West Papua have carried stories of culture, resilience, music, language, and community. Stories that deserve to be heard. The voice of West Papua Radio exists to share those stories, connect communities, and create a platform where West Papuan voices can reach audiences across Australia and beyond. We are proud to acknowledge 3CR Community Radio, our biggest sponsor and supporter, whose commitment to independent media and community broadcasting helps make this program possible. Please donate to Radio Zone to keep the spirit and the voices of West Papua on air every Tuesday at 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Thank you.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast, and we're now going to cross to Fung, who is a remote correspondent today, for our first segment.
Good morning, everyone. I am now joined on the line by Annette Brownlee, who is chairperson of Independent and Peaceful Australia Network, or IPAN. Annette joins us on the phone to discuss the public inquiry into AUKUS and the opportunity for people to make submissions. Welcome back to 3CR Breakfast, Annette.
Oh, great to be back, Song, and 3CR. Thank you.
So, as I just mentioned, a public inquiry into AUKUS was announced earlier this month, led by commissioners including former Environment Minister Peter Garrett and former Chief of Australian Defence Force Admiral Chris Barry. I was wondering if you could start by talking to us about the focus of the inquiry and why this has been called at this time.
Thanks, Song. Yes, really, out there in Australia, the debate and the concern about AUKUS has just never gone away, as despite the best wishes of the incoming Labor government in 2022, that when they rubber-stamped the agreement that was secretly organised and developed between Australia, primarily Scott Morrison, and his military-industrial colleagues in the United States. So we are left with a $365 billion agreement to buy these submarines to enable us to work on behalf of the United States, maintaining their hegemony in the Western Pacific. Mm. So obviously you can hear from my tone of voice that we don't really want these AUKUS submarines at all, and we want Australia to go down an independent and peace-promoting path. So that's IPAN's policy. We in IPAN are supporting the inquiry because it's the first time there's been an opportunity for people across the country to have their say. Excuse me. So there hadn't even been a parliamentary inquiry. But this is the first opportunity people in Australia have to hear from experts, but also to have their own voices heard. So the inquiry asks, and it's a series of questions, really. We're not trying to tell people what to think. We want these questions asked, like, for example, will Australia ever receive the submarines we're paying for?
Mm.
Where and how will the high-level nuclear waste be stored? Big question. How many real Australian jobs will this create, and at what opportunity cost? Why are we joining the United States to potentially go to war against China, our major trading partner? And will AUKUS jeopardise our sovereignty? Well, I think it's already jeopardised. And will AUKUS make us safer or turn us into a nuclear target? So these are the sort of questions that the inquiry has on its website, which I'm sure you can share with people listening.
Yeah.
And we're really putting our voices out there to ask people to put submissions in. The more submissions we have, the more weight this inquiry will have, because ultimately, you know, those of us from IPAN certainly want to see see a change in the government policy.
Yeah, thank you so much for that, Annette. And we'll get to the submissions part in just a moment, because I would like you to explain to our listeners how they can go about that. But firstly, the first hearing took place last week on Thursday, the 11th of June, with speakers including former Labor Foreign Affairs Minister Gareth Evans. I was wondering if you could give us a brief overview of this first hearing and some of the evidence that came out of it.
Well, every one of the commissioners that was there, and I live in Brisbane, so unfortunately I wasn't able to attend, but felt that it was very productive. The sort of evidence that was given with submissions that had already been written before the Melbourne conference were substantial. They had a lot of information in them that will help the commissioners develop the report coming out of the inquiry. I think Gareth Evans' submission, which I've read, and for anyone who hasn't read it, it's on Pearls and Irritations today. It's quite lengthy, but very substantial what he has had to say in that submission. So Melbourne was the first of five hearings, and the next one will be held in Fremantle at the end of June. I'm pretty sure it's going to be on Tuesday, the 30th of June. And it's a very appropriate location, of course, with the Stirling Naval Base so close and the build-up of American forces associated with AUKUS in that region. So further hearings will happen in Wollongong, in Sydney, in Canberra, and possibly, if we can raise enough money for the inquiry, we will also hold one in Darwin, which is really critical as the build-up. It is, you know, most dominant in the Northern Territory.
Yeah, thank you so much for that, Annette. So you mentioned before that you are inviting members of the public to make submissions. I understand that they can be in the form of written, oral or video submissions from citizens and organisations. Could you give us a bit more detail about this and why it would be important to have as many as possible to this public inquiry?
Sure, yeah. Well, a submission can be as short as a paragraph if people don't feel confident to write more, but it can be up to 3,000 words. Obviously, hearing from organisations is really important, and IPAN will definitely be putting a detailed submission in, and we're encouraging each of our 50 organisational members as well as our more than 300 individual members of IPAN to all of them to put a submission in. So that will really add weight. Obviously, we're looking for the government to take notice of this. There's been quite a lot of effort made by the Secretariat to invite the government and pro-AUKUS people to put submissions in. We want this inquiry to be as balanced as it possibly can be. We hear so much from those who support AUKUS, and we really need them to put submissions in as well, but to this point they have not accepted our invitation. But more than anything, we need to have the public, you know, the people of Australia really being represented in this inquiry, and we need to look for other means, opportunities to really make the Labor Party, whichever government that's in power, rethink the folly of the AUKUS and the forced posture agreement.
Yeah, thank you so much for that, Annette, and we will put details in our show notes on how people can access information on making a submission to the public or the public inquiry.
Very good website. So all the details are there on how to make a submission, how to donate, and sharing the information with friends, colleagues, members of other organisations. Yeah.
Thank you. And finally, if you could just briefly tell us what's coming up for IPAN, if there are any events that our listeners should take note of.
It was an exciting bit of news. When AUKUS was announced, we started a change.org petition, And we had something, you know, saying that we don't want AUKUS, healthcare, mm-hmm. not warfare. And in the first month we had, you know, like 2,000 people signed it. And then it's trickled up. But over the last month, it's done a big leap. It's now 53,000 people have signed that petition. And I encourage your listeners to go to the petition and sign it if you haven't.
Yeah.
But we've also got the IPAN conference coming up in Adelaide, 24th of July to the 26th of July, where we have United States filmmaker and activist Abby Martin speaking at the conference. We've also organised a national tour for her to be at screenings of her film, Earth's Greatest Enemy, which is an amazing film, and everybody should see it and help others to realise the environmental impact mm-hmm. of war and military. And it's showing in Melbourne on the 27th of July at Yarraville Sun Theatre. So get your tickets bought as soon as possible in Melbourne, and then it will go on to Wollongong and Sydney and then on to New Zealand. So lots happening.
And, perfect.
Yeah, thanks so much for giving me the opportunity to share that information about the inquiry. It's so important.
No, definitely.
Put
yeah.
your submissions in.
Thank you so much, Annette. Just hang on the line. Just for our listeners, we've been speaking to Annette Brownlee from IPAN, which is the Independent and Peaceful Australia Network. For more information, you can go to ipan.org.au. And if you'd like to find out more about making submissions to the inquiry, you can go to AUKUSPublicInquiry.com. You'll also find a live stream of the Melbourne hearing that took place last week. Thank you so much. And back to you, Julia and Juliet, in the studio.
Thanks, Fung. Next up, we're playing a song. This is a song by Eleanor Jar Wulungali Dixon, who is from a remote Northern Territory community of Malinja. Her music blends traditional language and contemporary expression, often drawing on ancestral stories and deep listening practices. This is her song, Spirit.
Yeah.
That was a song by Eleanor Jawungali called S-P-I-R-I-T. You're listening to the Tuesday Breakfast Show. And next up on the show, we will be interviewing Pranati. So Pranati, sorry, is that right pronunciation?
Pranati
is a creative worker, artist and local music groupie. They're deeply passionate about supporting emerging and diverse artists, a goal that is accumulated in founding South by Southeast Asian. She joins us today to tell us about SXSEA's upcoming gig Unmuted, featuring Asian diasporic storytellers to First Nation voices of this land, sharing music that reflects identity, resistance, and community. Welcome back to Tuesday Breakfast, Pranati.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No worries. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for coming into the studio.
No, it's so nice to be here. I love 3CR.
Awesome. Awesome. So could you tell us more about South by Southeast Asian and what it's all about?
Yeah, so SXSEA, or as we call it, Sexy, cool, is a platform to showcase and spotlight Asian talent, mm-hmm, here. We work with artists across the Asian diaspora, and the idea is that we want to give them a space to be who they are, mm-hmm, and express their artistry in their own way. So often, more than not, as POCs and artists, we find that we're asked to check boxes about who we are, and perform to that in a way that other people expect us to be. So the idea is that we can kind of give space for that, and as well as put on some interesting and different events around Melbourne.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, that's so important. Like, representation is important, especially like, yeah, representation that expands out of what people, you know, expect or stereotype. So applications are currently open for About Us For You, which is a series of films.
Oh, actually, I have to interrupt you there.
Yeah.
That program was from last year.
Oh my gosh, sorry.
No, 2 years ago.
Dang, sorry
last
about
year?
That.
Last year, 2 years ago. It's one of those two.
Oh, okay. Well, is there a different program that's available at the moment?
Or? Yeah, right now we're doing a live music event, actually.
Yes, yes,
it's called Unmuted.
Yeah.
And it's a platform for First Nations voices and Asian voices. And it's really all about resistance, identity, an expression.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got Srirachi, who's a Vietnamese artist. She's really raw, really brazen, really bold with her lyrics. And she's also from the queer community, so she's very open and expressive about that.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Caution, who is a First Nations. He's a rapper.
Cool.
Hip-hop artist as well. He's very politically vocal. And we have Saish, who brings a lot of culture into his storytelling. He's got a Sri Lankan Tamil background.
Mm.
So he brings a lot of those sounds and also the Tamil language into his hip-hop book.
Cool.
So it's all about hip-hop as well, yeah, which is like poetry, resistance, solidarity. And that's kind of the whole vibe.
Yeah.
We're going to be donating proceeds from ticket sales to Black People's Union Community Solidarity Fund, which is a really cool initiative to help in a very mutual aid style, First Nations peoples facing all kinds of problems, you know, incarceration, domestic violence, and all of that jazz, which is really cool.
Awesome. Yeah, that's really cool. yeah, I think having like, yeah, political music is so important, especially because, I don't know, like I think I was talking with a friend of mine about, yeah, music and how I think it maybe used, like I felt like music in the 90s, like a lot of mainstream music was quite political. So I think it's important to like keep making political music that makes a statement rather than music sounds good.
I'd say all music is political.
Right? Yeah, right.
Even when you're not making a statement, you're choosing to say something and tell a story.
Yeah, true.
Even if it's a song about love, like love is political too, the way we love, how we think about love as a concept. So it's really cool to be working with art in that way because it's just, it's a thing where you can explore so much to something that's so universal.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And you know, that's so true that all music does have like a message in just being what it is. Yeah, I really like that. And tells a story of that, whatever that person is experiencing. So I guess my next question is, you identify your music genre as, wait, sorry, I'm not sure if this actually applies. I guess, yeah, what does it mean for you to be, living in where there is like a lot of cultural and linguistic diversity, what do you think is the value of showcasing the range of music that can, the range that can be contained within a blanket term like Asian through organizations such as South by Southeast Asian?
Yeah, that's such a good question. Oh my God. I think the thing is that through the work that I have done, I've only been in this country for 4 years. I'm an immigrant myself. And through the work that I've done and through the people that I've met, I've just seen like such a diversity. Like being Asian is one thing, but also how you tell your stories is one thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much like intersectionality in all of that. And then, you know, we have first generation immigrants and second generation immigrants. And then we have people from South Asia and people from Southeast Asia and people from East Asia. And it's like, it is a big thing to try and span that whole expanse, but everyone's doing such interesting work that it kind of becomes easy.
Yes.
And it's really, and it is honestly a privilege to be able to do this kind of thing as well, to be able to discover that artist even.
Yes.
And we run a open mic series called Sweet and Sound occasionally.
Oh, cool.
And we discover so many artists that way. And it's sort of become a pipeline to our more like softer events. This one's a bit hard-hitting.
That's cool. Wow, that would be great. Open mic nights are awesome.
Yeah, we do it at a dessert shop. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah, you can have a little sweet treat.
Yeah, oh, that's sweet.
That's why it's called Sweet and Sound.
Oh, that's really cool. Wow. And I guess people just, do they write their own songs or they just come with,
you find a mix. Yeah, some people write their own, some people do covers. But it's really cool to be able to discover how many people like us that there are.
Yes.
In NAM doing their thing.
Yeah.
And then sort of trying to find other spaces that we can engage with them and like build that community as well.
Yeah, that's awesome. And community building is very like important, especially at a time right now.
Yeah.
So what do you think is the role of storytelling in shaping our understandings of what it means to be a truly diverse society?
Oh, it's everything, isn't it?
Yeah.
Storytelling is about who we are. Without stories, I can't even imagine what a society or a culture looks like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like me saying, when I was in India, I would sit down and my mom would feed me and this is what we ate. Like, that's a story in and of itself, but it's also telling you so much about other people and other practices and other ways of looking at things.
Yes.
It's kind of everything.
Yeah, I think so too. Because we'll have like an individual story, especially, knowing about where someone's from and like their background as well. It's really interesting actually and like important to talk about.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell us about South by Southeast Asia? Anything else you'd like to plug from the group?
Well, We have a website. It's sxsea.au. We have an Instagram, which is at sxsea.official. If you like what we do, if you want to just connect, or if you just want to like have a chat about how shit the world is.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to say shit in the air?
Yeah, I think so.
Just like pop into our DMs or come to an event. Like yeah. We love hearing from people and we love awesome. Like seeing what everyone's doing. You know, we're already getting some of those messages and we just want to keep expanding that more.
Yeah.
And yes, definitely come to Unmuted if people are free. It's on June 20th at the TOF. Three amazing artists. We're going to have the Sunday paper there as well, spooking some copies of their latest issues. It's just going to be a really fun party for the people.
Yeah, I love that. That sounds great.
Yeah, thank you. You should come.
Yeah, maybe I will. it sounds really good. Yeah, great. Thank you. Yeah. Is there anything else you'd like to share on air while you're here?
Not really. Yeah. I'm sure that everyone's having a lovely drive to work. I don't know if drives to work can be lovely in the morning, but, you know, I hope this has piqued your interest, brightened your day. I hope you find something interesting to come to from it. And if you did hear us on the radio and turn up at our event, let us know, because that's, like, awesome to hear.
Yeah, that is awesome. Yeah. I love it. Well, thank you so much, Pravati, for speaking with us.
Thank you guys for having me.
No worries. So, yes, we've been speaking with Pravati, who is a creative worker, artist, and local music groupie, who is part of SXCA. And you can, find more details. We'll link it in our podcast notes. And we'll also link their Instagram in our podcast notes. Be sure to check out their event, which is being held on the 20th. And like we were saying, all the proceeds will be donated to the Black People's Union Community Solidarity Fund. You're listening to the Tuesday Morning Breakfast Show.
3CR, your station, your voice.
Do a bit of disrupting and cause a bit of ruckus in the colony.
Always was, always will be.
Not celebrate Australia, but instead pay homage to the resistance of First Nations people against this illegal colonial occupation.
3CR, your station, your voice.
This country's black future is a fire.
If you're experiencing family violence, free legal support is available. You may need support with obtaining protection, setting up safe parenting arrangements, organising a new visa, getting into safe housing, or making sure bills and bank accounts are split fairly. Community legal centres have expertise in helping people who experience family violence and can provide confidential advice to help you understand your rights and legal options. Reach out today for guidance and support. Visit www.fclc.org.au and click Get Help to find a community legal centre near you. You don't have to face family violence alone. If you are currently in crisis, please contact Safe Steps on 1800 015 188. Federation of Community Legal Centres is a 3CR supporter.
Women on the Line, a radical intersectional current affairs program.
Making space for the voices of women and gender diverse people.
Featuring in-depth conversations with guests from so-called Australia and beyond.
Ultimately, we're looking to care for country, to continue our culture, to continue our ceremonies, so that our children have a strong sense of self and belonging.
Just because our marginalization intersect where we're both disabled, it doesn't change your white privilege. It doesn't change your straight privilege. It doesn't change your able-bodied privilege.
Sex work, the word itself, has been such a word with a lot of stigma. However, we cannot ignore that there are women out there who are making their livelihood out of this job.
Listen every Monday morning at 8:30 on 3CR Community Radio 855 AM or stream live on 3cr.org.au.
Love podcasts? We've got you.
Find Women on the Line via the Community Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Women on the Line, where about?
Feminisms in their multitudes.
First Nations sovereignty.
Land back.
Trans liberation. Poo-poo on the turfs.
Abolition.
Anti-racism.
Sex worker rights.
Staff liberation.
Disability justice.
Anti-imperialism.
Decolonisation.
An end to borders.
Workers' justice.
And so much more.
Women on the Line, broadcasting on the 3CR airwaves since 1986.
Woo! Woo!
Left after breakfast. 38 years of information, insights, analysis and opinion. Just plain old common sense, really. 8:30 a.m. on Fridays.
You're listening to Tuesday Breakfast, and this is Juliet, and we're about to speak to Catherine Noon, who's back again after joining us last week for the Radiothon. Thank you so much, Catherine, for coming in last week. We appreciated that.
Pleasure. Great to celebrate community radio.
It really is. So Catherine, obviously you're from the Save Our Community Health campaign, and you're back today as the independent review into CoHealth has finally been released last week on the 3rd of June, and that comes after months of delays. So Catherine's here to share the report's key findings and what it reveals about the governance and management of CoHealth, and we're also going to discuss what some of the recommendations for the health service was in the report and what that means for the future of CoHealth. Welcome back to Tuesday Breakfast, Catherine.
Thank you. Always good to have a chat.
Yeah, definitely. I think you must be so relieved that this report has finally come out. I know, we've had a few conversations in the lead up as it kept getting delayed further and further. Can you start off by summarising, what are the key findings of this report?
Yeah, so as you said, so it's the report. It was the independent review of CoHealth, general practice and related services, and the final report was finished in March. And as you said, it was only finally released publicly on the 3rd of June. So it's been a long wait. But the report has 13 recommendations, and there are recommendations there for the Victorian government, for the Commonwealth government and for CoHealth. And the report shows that the review panel, they did a really thorough job. They listened to our concerns. Professor Stephen Duckett and his team, they point out in that report that there are four things that need to be considered to make the services viable. CoHealth's management, oversight and governance, the CoHealth model of care, the client base of CoHealth and the MBS funding model. They also point out that there are no other fully bulk billing practices in Collingwood, Fitzroy or Kensington that are taking new patients. So when CoHealth announced they were closing and said that we would easily find somewhere else, that was just simply untrue. Do you want me to tell you a bit about it?
Tell us a bit more. I think, that is kind of shocking that there's no other bulk billing practices, but I do believe that actually. I feel like it is getting harder and harder to find. Maybe do you want to step us through, maybe what the report revealed about the governance and management of CoHealth?
Yeah, and I've got a bit of a summary of the recommendations
sure.
If that's all right. Yeah. Sorry, it's a long report, so we've got lots of stuff in it. But overall, we were really happy that the report, it does align with what we were calling for transparency, for accountability, for appropriate funding, for saving the Collingwood site, because we know that kept getting off the discussion, but also in including community in decision making and reinstating services like pharmacy and counselling. There's a whole, as I said, there's 13 recommendations, but some of the key ones are about calling on the Victorian Minister for Health to take action about CoHealth's failings, and we'll get into that in a minute as well. It also recommends funding for improving the services. They recommend having new multidisciplinary models of care, funding and evaluation. They suggest that CoHealth co-design their model of care with staff and community, and with Northwest and Melbourne Primary Health Network overseeing how CoHealth does things better. They've got recommendations of how CoHealth can work better with and support their staff. And they also have a recommendation that CoHealth formally acknowledge the traumatic impact of their actions and the decisions on staff and all of us in our community. Because overall, the report definitely shows an alarming lack of governance and management for CoHealth services in Kensington, in Fitzroy, in Collingwood.
and it shows that their financial reporting to the board, it didn't actually meet contemporary governance standards or fundamental risk management.
Yeah, that's very concerning to hear.
Yeah.
I think it really points to the need for an independent review like this to actually uncover what's been going on. Would you be able to speak a little bit more about, in terms of the governance and management, what were some of the broader issues?
Well, one of the big ones is that the report offered a couple of options that might be a way of fixing the governance and management. But it points out that there, as we've all talked about it many times, but there is limited confidence that the Board of CoHealth will actually fix the underlying issues. And so the recommendations, the report talks through how they then came to the realisation that actually the only solution is removing the board. It's the best option because there is such a clear need for change in how the oversight and management of CoHealth works. And we, as a community, we don't trust these people who have made the decision to close our services. We don't trust that they can do things better. We don't trust them to bring on new board members or a new CEO because whoever they bring on, they're going to teach them to have the same approach that they've already had.
Yeah, I think that really makes a lot of sense. And I know that, when you've come on previously, there was this consensus that, the community wasn't very happy with the current board. So it's interesting to see that reflected in the report as well. Thinking about these findings in the report, how does the community feel about them?
I think throughout all of this, there's been so many sad things. Like, firstly, that CoHealth announced this brutal closure just within short notice and in the lead up to Christmas. Then they kept on telling us that the services are closing, and they have continued even to last week to tell us that we're new patients if we haven't had an appointment for a while. So if people are turning up now, they're still being told you're a new patient and therefore you can't get an appointment because they're not taking new patients. We've also had stories of people being approached in the foyer to be talking about the changes that are happening and what's happened with the outcomes of the report findings. And even those people have been saying, oh, it's not clear whether our services here will continue. So they keep making us feel like we can't keep coming back to our community health service. So people are feeling that they're not able to make appointments and get the health services they need. And we also know that the independent review, as I said, one of the recommendations was that CoHealth formally acknowledged the trauma that they've caused. And they have known about that recommendation to apologise to us since March. And they still haven't publicly apologised and admitted those mistakes to us. Instead, the board keep telling us they're working hard. But what we see and what we're here is there are a lot of upset people, there are people who feel scared, and there are people who don't know where to get help because CoHealth has let them down.
Yeah, I think that's really concerning to hear that impact that it's had on the community, and I think really worrying as well that there's not that continuity and people are being told that they're a new patient, which is obviously not the case. And I think really points to kind of, these structural issues that CoHealth is having. Now that this report has finally been released and you've been able to go through, its findings and recommendations, what will Save Our Community Health be advocating for moving forward?
Yeah, so we really need someone to show leadership and to act on those really clear, considered recommendations of the report. Like, our state and federal governments say that they support public health, but how has this happened under Labor at the state and the federal level? We need the state Minister for Health to remove the board and to implement all of the recommendations. The report is really clear about what needs to happen, because clearly things need to change for our community health services to flourish. We want them to stay open for future generations. So what can we make sure that these things are really put in place so that it is actually able to continue? We want community to be put back in community health. People who have been turned away from appointments have been going to CoHealth for 30 or 40 years and have been part of boards and advisory groups and decision-making over the years, and now we're excluded from that. So we want, in line with the recommendations, we want to co-design, wraparound, multidisciplinary services that meet our changing complex needs. We know that the staff at CoHealth know what works and they can make this happen once there's new management, once there's a new board. We need the community back in community health. We need a model that considers people as a whole, because we've talked before as well about how community health, it's more than just doctors. It's community development, it's allied health, it's health promotion, it's system navigation, social support,
prevention, early intervention, all of it all wrapped up together. And the funding for that has to be flexible to allow the health services to adapt to all of our changing needs when we're going to the services. So we really want the new board, the new management at CoHealth to work with us, to work with the community, the staff and other community health services to get on with. We want to be able to rebuild and bring back great community health services that have the community at the heart of it.
Yeah, I think that all sounds really key to what the campaign's been advocating for in the last few months. And, hopefully that's the future that we can have moving forward. Do you have an indication of how open the current kind of CoHealth board are and staff as well to taking on these recommendations?
Yeah, so CoHealth say have put out notices saying that they accept the recommendations. Then when you read further, they query some of it and say that some of the things in the report are wrong. The board tell us that they are meeting many times a week and are trying to make changes. We know that there have been some people who have left the board. We understand that at the moment there are three vacancies that they're advertising. But like I said earlier, we're concerned about who those existing people would bring on if they're working in that way. So we want to make sure that those decisions aren't happening before there's more community involvement, because we also want to understand what's happening with their 10-year plan, because that 10-year plan included closing our services. So what are they going to do to refresh that and actually look at what's going to happen next? And that's where you need some new people coming in to help that happen. It is a lot of change, but it has been a place where it's been sad place for people who are coming in to get their services, feeling that they're losing access to services. It's been a hard place for people to work with all of this change, but to get some actual refresh would really help to just really invigorate what comes next and how we can actually work together. There's really concrete recommendations that will really help. And we know that the recommendations by Stephen Duckett and his team are really well thought out. These are people who really understand the system and understand what is needed for community health. So we want to make sure that we can listen to that and act on it.
Yeah, for sure. And it does sound like, it is a moment for change and that the community is really advocating for that. And, if our listeners do want to get involved or support Save Our Community Health, where can they go to find out more information?
Well, I've got two things to ask of our listeners. So if they could, we really need the State Minister for Health to act. So if you can call or write to Minister Harriet Shing, we need to ask her to implement all of the recommendations and to sack the board. Her email is harriet.shing@minstaff.vic.gov.au. harriet.shing@minstaff.vic.gov.au. And her phone number, 03 5134 8000. Really keen for people to get in touch with the minister and say what we need happening for our community to get community health back on track. And we also will keep updating everybody through our mailing list. So please get involved, come be part of the campaign, send us an email. Our email address is savecommunityhealth@gmail.com. So savecommunityhealth, all one word, savecommunityhealth@gmail.com. And we will keep everybody posted as we find out more, and we hope that we work towards a much better and stronger community health services for us.
Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. And really appreciate your time today, Catherine.
Thanks for having me in.
Thanks, Catherine, for joining us. And we've been chatting to Catherine Noon, organiser at Save Our Community Health, about recent developments in the campaign as an independent review has been released last week. And we spoke about the findings of that review and what's next now that that's been released. We'll be back shortly.
We know you love listening to 3CR, but we also know that many of you haven't downloaded the Community Radio Plus app yet.
The app lets you tune in anywhere and share the station with your friends.
So, show the love and share the love and search Community Radio Plus wherever you get your apps.
Mm-hmm. 3CR, celebrating 50 years.
Throughout the month of June, we're asking you to support fierce, independent and community-controlled media by making a donation to our Radiothon.
We'll be taking donations online, over the phone and in the station to help keep 3CR going for another year.
To donate, go to 3cr.org.au, call the station on 03 94 19 8377,
or drop in at 21 Smith Street, Fitzroy, during business hours.
3CR, celebrating 50 years.
You're listening to 3CR Tuesday Breakfast, and we're now crossing to Fung for our next segment.
Thanks, Juliet. So, Shifra Bluestein is from Footscray Community Response. She is on the line today to give us the latest update on the Maribyrnong Council's proposed welcome crew in Footscray and explains why the closure of Foley House will be a devastating loss for the community. Welcome back to 3CR Breakfast, Shifra. So first up on Foley House, can you tell us more about the decision to shut down this accommodation and the impact that it will have on residents?
Yes, sure. So Foley House is a long-term supported accommodation service in Footscray run by the Salvation Army. Men over 40 with disabilities and complex care needs who have kind of been homeless for extended periods were given what they called forever homes there with 24/7 support. However, since we think about like last year, the Salvos have been quietly trying to transfer residents out. The community only became aware of this recently when it was leaked to the media. So workers at Foley and in the sector say that there is really very little available accommodation that provides the same level of support, and so residents are being moved into inferior accommodation that doesn't meet their kind of support needs, or even being referred back into the homelessness system. And workers are saying that this is likely to push some of these men, or a significant number of these men, back into rough sleeping and homelessness. The Salvation Army are saying that the program is too expensive to run, even though they take residents basically entire Centrelink benefits and their NDIS packages. These are men with significant trauma histories and significant kind of care needs who are either going to be back in inadequate accommodation or possibly back on the street.
Thank you for that, Shifra. And I know on the Footscray Community Response Instagram account, there were some testimonies that were filmed from Foley House with interviews with the men who have been living there, and they talk about the kinds of support and the community that has been created in that accommodation. So, yeah, it would be quite devastating for those men. And like you said, if they're pushed back into even just the other inferior housing, they wouldn't have their complex needs met. You mentioned briefly that just now that Salvation Army said it's too expensive to run. What do we know about the funding for this program, and how can we keep Foley House open and operating for those who need it?
So according to workers in the sector that we've spoken to, the Salvos has been largely self-funding the program. We're not sure exactly how long it's been operating, but maybe around 20 years. We've been told that the state government has only been contributing funding for maybe a couple of staff salaries. But we do know that the government has now quietly found money for an extra worker for Foley House to help with the transfers out for the next 6 months while residents trying to find residents' new accommodation. I guess from Footscray Community Response's perspective, this is a responsibility of both the Salvos and the government. The Salvos have an annual income of close to $1.3 billion, about $500 million of annual government grants, But they spend less on housing and homelessness than they do on their op shops, which are supposed to generate income, not eat up close to 20% of their yearly budget. So we think it's really very irresponsible for the Salvo to abandon these men and for, you know, this kind of reason when they clearly have a lot of money that they could cross-subsidise this program with. But at the same time, we're in a severe housing crisis that's been created by government policy decisions. The state government is in the process of destroying public housing across the state. The state government has just recently provided the Salvos with close to $1 million to run this cafe in Footscray that provides a meal to people who are sleeping rough, but not even a toilet, let alone any, you know, housing options for them, and then kind of sends them back into rough sleeping. So we think the state government needs to step in. They can, you know, run Foley House as a public venture, or they can find another more reliable and reputable not-for-profit to run it. They have to do this. We need more Foley Houses, not less. This is just appalling that neither the state government nor the Salvos think this is a problem that they need to solve.
Mm. Thank you so much for that, Shifra, and what you've touched on in your response just now. Just goes to show how connected so many of these issues are. We're looking at, yeah, the public, the housing crisis, the demolition of public housing towers, the increase in homelessness and the lack of resources and funding going to support people. But also, I guess, and we're about to speak to this in a moment, but what's happening in Footscray more specifically when it comes to providing support for those in the community who need it. There was a rally on Sunday opposing the closure of Foley House, and I was wondering if there was anything you'd like to report back to our listeners about that action.
Yeah, just that we did have a great rally in Footscray on Sunday. We heard from a former resident and a former worker about the sort of the what they called the jackpot level of accommodation that residents receive there. The former resident said in his statement that, you know, he was gobsmacked when he arrived there. He'd never felt so safe and, you know, thought that he could stay there forever. Mm-hmm. So there was a lot of anger and distress from people who came to the rally about how, you know, we can be letting services like Foley House be shuttered while there are dozens of people sleeping rough in Footscray who need something similar to Foley House. We were also building kind of support for a petition that we've got going that's got currently over 1,200 signatures and building, so we would appreciate any listeners signing the petition as well.
Yep, that's great. Thank you so much, Shiva, and I'll make sure that we include that in our show notes after the program. And, yeah, it just goes to show, you know, time and time again, members of this community and the public, you know, we have all the answers on what works and what support we need to provide the people the most vulnerable in our community. And it's all there. The answers are all there. And so, yeah, it's incredibly frustrating when you've got big NGOs and the state government that aren't doing anything or actively pushing back against it. Now on to Footscray's, or the Maribyrnong Council, so-called, Welcome Crew, which we've been sort of updating our listeners on in the past like 6 to 8 months. The last time we spoke to Marie Party, there was very little information available about the so-called Welcome Crew and what that would look like. I was just wondering if any further information has been provided about the models or framework on which this crew would be based.
Yeah, so for your listeners' background, the Welcome Crew is kind of the model that Council has proposed following the decision to drop the security program because the community thought it was a terrible response to social issues happening in Footscray. So the proposal for Council, they're voting on it tonight. In the proposal, they say they're responding to a desire for greater clarity from the community about what the Welcome Crew will be, but in our view, there's still not actually very much clarity being provided. Mm. They are saying what the Welcome Crew will and won't do, but it's still vague. So, for example, they say the Welcome Crew will engage with traders, but they won't be a traders' complaint service. They will identify amenity and safety issues and escalate matters to local law and police, but they won't operate as a security program. They say they will connect people to services, but they won't solve homelessness or what they call complex safety issues. So to be honest, it's still pretty unclear. And you know, we do think that this is largely an optics kind of exercise to look like they are doing something, I guess, more friendly in the community, but it's still not clear what the real purpose is. So, for example, we're concerned about what discussions will they actually be having with traders if it's not to facilitate complaints and gather intel about traders' views of the problem. You know, your listeners might know that, like, traders have been kind of the driving force of this sort of more carceral and punitive responses in Footscray because they kind of make this argument that homeless people and marginalised people are, I don't know, making business too hard for them. Mm. So these are traders which continue to characterise the people bearing the brunt of capitalism and gentrification as the problem, not those systems themselves, you know?
Yes.
And frankly, like, the proposal does have more sort of human rights rhetoric in it, but the council also itself continues to frame individuals as problems to be managed by this program. So I guess we think that council is continuing to wipe its hands of any responsibility to the underlying reasons people are in these situations and are suffering in the first place. And we're still pretty dubious about what this program is going to do.
Mm. Yeah, thank you for that, Shifra. And, yeah, I mean, even the name of this model as the Welcome Crew, It is supposed to reassure people. But like you said, the fact that there hasn't really been any clarity about what this model would look like or any transparency into the details is quite concerning. And, yeah, I guess can you talk about then a bit more about the context in which this so-called Welcome Crew would be operating? I know that, you know, Footscray area is heavily, there's a heavy surveillance there. There are PSOs, there's Victorian Police and CCs as well. So I was wondering if you could talk about, yeah, this network of surveillance in the Footscray area.
Yeah, so how this program is going to operate, we think, is going to be complex anyway. So PSOs are at the station now from 9 a.m. till the last train. There are heaps more police operations happening through Footscray CBD. Meanwhile, Community Connectors has started at the station, so they are a program that has been successful in the southeastern suburbs. It's actually a de-escalation model rather than an enforcement model, like staffed by social workers and mental health workers. And there are also supposed to be outreach services and the Welcome Crew kind of on the streets as well. So the boundaries between all these roles is incredibly unclear. We think the Community Connectors is like a decent start, and we welcome that as a kind of first step to a non-carceral alternative first responder type model, but they can't do their job when there are so many cops around trying to, you know, intervene in and basically escalate situations. And the other thing is, although the council is saying they are no longer running the enforcement model, the mayor has claimed responsibility for a massive increase in police presence in Footscray after advocating strongly for this. So, I mean, basically, my personal view is council's kind of gaslighting the community. They don't want to be held responsible for enforcement models they run themselves because it's become toxic for them, but they are still advocating for those same sort of models to be run by police. And meanwhile, council is conspicuously not advocating for keeping Foley House open, as an example, or other actual solutions to, you know, this, the suffering that people are experiencing in Footscray.
Yeah, that's really interesting, and I guess it is just so important that there are community groups like Footscray Community Response who are keeping a close eye on what's being put out there, what's being said in public. And what's actually happening or trying to read between the lines or look into the details of this program because it does seem like, yeah, they are trying to placate everyone. Yeah.
But I don't know. Yeah, it sounds like not much is actually changing there. Unfortunately, Shifra, we've run out of time for this morning. But perhaps we can speak again in the future about alternative first responders. I've been having conversations with the National Justice Project about that more generally, so it would be interesting to hear your take on what that could look like in Footscray. But for now, thank you so much for joining us on the program again.
Thanks, Mom.
So that was Shifra Bluestein speaking about the so-called welcome crew in Footscray and the Maribyrnong Council's vote on this model at tonight's meeting. There is currently a petition opposing the closure of Foley House in Footscray. So you can head to the show notes after the program to find a link. And to keep up with other actions, you can head to Footscray Community Response on Instagram. Back to you in the studio.
Thank you so much, Fung. And Julia, I believe we're going to have a little break from regular programming to talk about Radiothon.
Yeah. So we're going to shout out, some of our amazing donors. So thank you guys for donating. Because it's a Radiothon, but also, the 50th birthday of 3CR, which is pretty awesome. So I will read out a few names. So thank you to Fleur Taylor, Elena Gomez, Gab Reed, Cedar Morton, Karina, Elizabeth Shield, Jordana Silverstein, Clice Hart, Ivka Taylor-Moss, Victoria Johnson, Tran Nguyen, and our pledge donors, Pilar Aguilera, Rhea Williams, and Brooke Kay. Thank you guys so much for your donations.
So exciting. And then we've also had some donors come through on our Give Now page. And this goes to all of the 3CR breakfast programs. We're going to try to highlight the ones who we think are for Tuesday breakfast. So starting with Asmina Clark, James Clark, Tian Xiao Shi, as well as Kwong Tran, Sarah Baird, Chloe Gratian, Romany Claringbull, who both Julia and I know, which is exciting, yes. And also Lauren Balcombe. So we'll do our little sound effects. But yeah, thank you so much to everyone who's donated. Keep the funds coming in. We're still going with Radiothon, so it's not too late to donate. And we'll also shout you out next week if you make a donation.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you. Yeah. 3CR is such a special radio station. It's such a great part. It's such a great thing to be a part of the show. I remember when I started here, I remember seeing some... there were like little postcards done by Uncle Teljum, watercolour paintings of like landscapes. And I remembered that I'd actually bought one of those a couple of years ago before. So it was so interesting to see them again. I felt like such a good sign that I felt like I was meant to be here. And it's such a, beautiful like communal space. I feel very lucky to be a part of this.
Well, we're very lucky to have you, Julia. And I know we're going to play another segment today. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes. So as part of 3CR's 50th birthday, we're doing a weekly deep dive into 3CR's history. This is an edit of archival recordings of the S11 protests that occurred in the year 2000. A crowd of up to 50,000 protesters united in defiance against the World Economic Forum that was being held at the Crown Casino, a gathering of captains of industry and corporate head honchos whose aim was to discuss how to make neoliberal global capitalism increase faster via profit increase and cheapened labour. Take a listen to some footage from the protest.
We've got the protesters standing strong in a solid bank, and the horses haven't really moved them at all.
And that's really part of the problem about this whole economic system that's been built.
that the fictions are being given the full support of all institutions of the world. The fiction of the corporation is the only one that has rights in today's world. Citizens don't have rights.
So the blockade is working, it's been peaceful, but the message is getting through to the people up there in the Crown Casino right behind me that people power is arriving and they aren't in control. They never were elected, and we've got to get democratic control back into the way the world works.
What has happened today in Melbourne is unjust, undemocratic, and, I repeat, uncivilized.
Propaganda machine is really functioning against us, and we need to do the other kind of propaganda. We need to take to the streets. Where else can we go otherwise? We are locked out of many of these institutions. We are not allowed to participate in civil society. We don't control the media, and we don't have access to many of these institutions. And in our own countries, we battle every day in terms of getting more access to our government. So if that's the state of the world, then civil society is no other alternative than to speak up in the best way we can.
Both software and hardware are moving faster today, improving faster today than they ever have.
Computers are not where the companies are making their money. It's in their software programs. And so you have intellectual property rights police created in Peru and in China to go into youth hostels to check whether the students are using shared software. I call it shared software. Or they're using, according to what the corporations call, pirated software. If you have not bought an original copy from Microsoft, you are a pirate.
Wesley College, right, they marched at the top of the high school student rally on Monday. They themselves have their own group at Wesley College, and they've had a group now for 4 months or so with their own website. If you look at the S11 homepage, you'll see it there, preparing for S11. These are students that we didn't come knocking on their door. They came knocking on the S11 door.
Specifically for queer people, you can see how corporations influence and perpetuate homophobia and also benefit from its existence through the existence of the pink dollar and stuff like that. And also the immense influence over a lot of institutions in society, like the media, like the education system, the legal system, that we have, you know, a really homophobic society, and that needs to be challenged at this kind of level.
And as always with World Economic Forum events around the world, the discussions have been lively and they've been provocative. In that context, we are very disappointed that some 150 to 200 of our participants have been stranded at their hotels and unable to join us here at the Crown Complex. That's an abridgment of their rights, and it results from direct violence.
Inside, you've got everyone in a dark gray suit. They talk to each other. They have no idea about how reality works because they never have to come in contact with it. They're so privileged that they can insulate themselves at every point from every consequence of their actions and decisions. And then outside, you've got all these amazing survivors. People surviving without jobs, people managing to find communication systems in spite of having no access. And then I think to myself, if only the privileged could listen a little more sensitively to the excluded, we have a chance for the world.
And the cheer's gone up, the bus is backing off, and the ramp is occupied by the protesters, and the gate is secure.
After this morning, we'll have the Prime Minister of this country and also the Premier of this state coming out and giving a national a speech to the nation and saying that it was un-Victorian, un-Australian and unrepresentative. Couldn't be anything less than that. It was people down there protesting for a common cause. Everybody in this country has a right to protest, and they have a right to protest peacefully without the police interfering with violence.
And this protest has been determined on peace, but has also been determined to make a point. And that doesn't mean being relegated to the footpath. It means stepping onto the pavement, as the suffragettes did, as the slavery abolitionists did, and as we are doing to make a point for a better future. So here we are. That is the power of self-interest. This is the sea of humanity. Thank you, everybody.
And then there are others who insist they can't be wrong, and all the people protesting have to be now redefined as terrorists. It's happened in your country, it's happened in UK, it's happened in my country, and I'm sure anywhere where there's effective popular mobilization, there's a rewriting of terrorist laws to basically say people engaging in their fundamental rights to defend their fundamental rights are a new brand of terrorists.
We've been listening to an archival footage edit of the S11 protest that went down in the year 2000, a protest of up to 50,000 people who gathered against the World Economic Forum that was being held at Crown Casino and mostly endorsed the expansion of neoliberal global capital. Shout out to John for putting this edit together.
And now for a quick events rundown for the week. These are all taking place on Saturday, 20th of June. So at 9 a.m, there's a fundraiser, the Social Justice Outfit Bazaar, taking place at Green Hills Neighbourhood House in Greensboro. Then also on the same day, Saturday at 12 p.m., is a fundraiser for Lebanon taking place at Dukana in Coburg. And then finally, also on the Saturday at 6 p.m., there's a Palestinian feast. Celebrate Refugee Week with us at Fenton, 158 Rathdown Street in Carlton. So some events for you all to attend this weekend. Just a reminder that as we were discussing earlier, it is 3CR's Radiothon this month. So, yeah, you can keep the support flowing in and, you can go to 3cr.org/donate. Or you can also text 0488 809 855, or you can call 0394198377.
Yes. Because we're volunteers and, we rely on these donations to help keep the shows going. You could also subscribe to 3CR as well.
Yeah, there's so many options, so many ways to support the station. And Julia, before we go, we might do a bit of a rundown of what we've talked about today. So at 7:15, Fung spoke to Annette Brownlee, chairperson of the Independent and Peaceful Australia Network, IPAN, to discuss the public inquiry into AUKUS and the opportunity for people to make submissions.
At 7:30, we spoke with Pranati, who is a member of the SXSEA, about the upcoming gig they are holding on the 20th, is going to be an event that has a lot of emerging and diverse artists, will be held on the 20th of June.
And that's at the TOF.
Yes, at the TOF.
Which is in the city.
Yep.
And then at 7:45, we spoke to Catherine Noon, an organiser from Save Our Community Health. Catherine joined us to talk about the independent review into co-health, which was released last week after months of delays. We discussed the report's key findings, what it revealed about governance and management of co-health, its recommendations, and what that means for the future of co-health. And then at 8, Fung spoke to Shifra Bluestein from Footscray Community Response with updates on the Maribyrnong Council's proposed welcome crew in Footscray, and also talked about the closure of Foley House and why that will be a devastating loss for the community.
And then at 8:15, we listened to some S11 snippets, which was a huge protest that was held in the year 2000 with around 50,000 protesters against the World Economic Forum.
So, we really appreciate everyone tuning in today. We'll be back next week. As we said, the Radiothon does continue. You can get in touch with the station at any point this month to make a donation. All the support, as Julia said, does go to keeping Radical Radio afloat, and so that we can keep going for another 50 years. Mm. We'll be back next week. This has been Tuesday Breakfast on the 16th of June.
3CR Breakfast would like to thank the New International Bookshop, Melbourne's radical bookstore and venue, for their financial support of this program. You can find Nibs opposite reception in the Lygon Street wing of Trades Hall Carlton. You can buy books online and keep up to date with upcoming events at nibs.org.au.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.